Welcome to the Dear Lovejoy podcast, sponsored by Cooker. Spelt quicker, pronounced cooker. 100 degree hot water straight from your tap. Today is another special. Today's conversation is with MMA fighter Jake Shields. I feel so privileged to have him come on the podcast. He was fighting last night in a pro jiu-jitsu match, and he's going off to do seminars today. And so lovely of him. He said, I will do the podcast with you. I'll slip it in between events. And it's just really lovely. Lovely guy. We talk all about mixed martial arts, talk about UFC, we talk about Conor McGregor, we talk about being a vegetarian, and we talk about him saving Trump fans. So much to talk to him about. Thoroughly enjoyed his company. Let's meet him. This is Jake Shields.
This is just a guide to modern life. Modern life is hard to get just right. It can frustrate you and annoy. And if it does, right into Dear Lovejoy.
Jake, thank you for joining me in my kitchen this morning. I've got you a present. I buy all my guests a present. I didn't know what to buy you because do you drink? Because I buy a lot of people a lot of wine.
I drink a little bit, yeah. Not a heavy drinker, but I'll drink occasionally.
Right, okay. Well, I didn't get you wine.
Okay. Well, if I didn't drink it now, I wouldn't be able to fly with it anyways.
Exactly. And I couldn't work out whether you were vegan or vegetarian.
Vegetarian.
You're just so. Vegetarian. Yeah. I was worried about buying you chocolate in case it wasn't like. So I got you a book, and this is my favorite book. This is by a guy called Haemin Sunim, and this is the kind of closest I get to a holy book for me. And he's a Buddhist from South Korea, and it's a very famous he sold about 10 million of these worldwide. But well, I think it's a
yeah,
really
that's
lovely
awesome.
Book.
I like reading
and it's a good book for the flight back up.
Yeah, it's perfect because I actually need a book right now.
Yeah, there you go. And it's about slowing down in life. And I imagine your life's quite hectic.
Oh, yeah. I'm not very good at slowing down. I probably need to read that. I'm always go, go, go.
Training.
Just training everything. I'm always just busy.
Okay. How are you enjoying being over in London at the moment?
It's nice. Yeah, I've been here for a few days. It's always a lot going on. You know, speaking of busy, London's a very busy city with lots going on.
So you're doing some seminars today at Wave.
Yep. Got a seminar, then one tomorrow. I'm flying out to Amsterdam, doing a couple out there, then back to the US.
And what are you doing a seminar? You're teaching people to...
Sometimes I do jiu-jitsu seminars or other ones, mixed martial arts. The ones I'm doing out here are mostly all for jiu-jitsu, which, you know, we go through the techniques, and there's quite a big market for the Brazilian jiu-jitsu now. It's a sport's growing so fast. Yeah, it's great. And it's such a good sport, you know, for pro competitors like me, obviously, but then also just so many just like common people. It's a great way to stay in shape and keep your mind working, make friends. I think it's, you know, something I highly recommend to everyone.
It seems to be really addictive. Everyone I know is taking it up. Yeah. Just doesn't seem to be able to put it down.
No, it's true. I think getting through the first, you know, 6 months is hard because you're getting like choked out every day over and over. so it can be rough in the beginning, but once you get through that, it's just so addictive. Once you start doing the choking and stuff, it becomes a lot more fun.
Yeah. So when did you fly? When did you arrive here? Only a couple of days ago.
Tuesday morning. Tuesday.
All right. So you had a fight last night. Yeah. Had the jet lag gone? Had you had enough time to...
It was mostly gone. I was still feeling a little bit off. You know, it takes a little longer than that, but it's, you know, I was like mostly gone.
So last night was pro jiu-jitsu.
Yeah, professional jiu-jitsu match.
You went up a weight.
Yeah, I went up a weight class to the world champion. Unfortunately, you know, lost the decision, but the guy again went against one of the best of the sport, and you know, I was up two weight classes. So
two weight. How hard is that?
Well, kind of two weight classes because he was up above a normal weight class too. I usually compete at 170, and I was competing at like 200 pounds. So it's a So it's a big jump, but it depends on who you're going against. Most guys, I can go up a weight or two and not be that big of a deal. But you know, when it's a world-class guy like this, you start feeling the weight a little bit.
Does weight make a lot of difference when you're grappling on the floor? Excuse me, by the way, some of my questions might be a bit basic, but I'm not.
Yeah, see, like, so normally, like, if you're way better than the guy, weight makes very little difference, you know? So it's not like, if the guy's, you know, say the guy's a blue belt or something, purple belt, you know, a few years experience, it doesn't really make much of a difference. But when you have two of the very elite guys, or I guess if you're both beginners or both intermediate, then weight does make a big difference.
Right. Watching your fights, you want to take everyone down to the ground, don't you?
Generally,
that's where you want to go.
I like to take them down, be on top, and then, you know, try to pass and get a choke from there.
Okay. Are you uncomfortable when you're fighting, punching and kicking
stuff?
Not
uncomfortable. No. I'm just more comfortable on the ground. So it's, you know, I feel at home down there. Yeah, in mixed martial arts, you got to be able to, you know, to be good everywhere.
But that's the most important bit, isn't it? That getting down onto the ground.
I mean,
if you don't have that, you can't win, can you?
Well, there's exceptions. There's guys that are really good at stopping you from getting them there. There's guys that are really good at really good at punching and kicking, and they're really good at just stopping guys from taking them down or getting back to their feet. So there's so much different strategy in fighting. There's different ways. Guys approach it so many different ways. So it's hard to say one way is better. You know, there's been so many successful guys that have different strategies, so it's hard to say there's only one way to do it.
Yeah. It seems to me, though, in mixed martial arts, there is nowhere to hide.
Yeah, it's a tough sport. You know,
in boxing, you can put your defense up, move around a lot, and try and stay away from the fight. You can't do that in MMA, can you?
Yeah, no, because there's just too many variables. That's what keeps it exciting. You know, there's, you know, kicks, punches, elbows, knees, takedowns, submissions. So there's always just something coming at you, and that's why it's almost impossible for MMA for anyone to stay defeated. You know, sometimes you see the top boxer staying undefeated, but MMA it's very, very rare because there's just too many different styles and too many different unknowns that can happen.
How did you get involved in it in the first place?
I was wrestling in college, and then I met a guy, Chuck Liddell, who ended up going on to be one of the, you know, biggest stars the sport's ever seen, the first mainstream star. But I met him, he was fighting, but he wasn't really a big star yet. He was like, you know, a local tough guy, and they went into his gym. I always thought I was the toughest guy around, you know, being a college wrestler. I'm like, yeah, never lost a street fight. I'm like, I seen this guy, Chuck. He had a mohawk, tattoos on the side of his head. Don't know if you've ever seen him, but he looks like, He looks like a tough guy, but to me, right. I'm like, oh yeah, I'm going to tear this guy up. You know, went in and sparred him, and he just, you know, gave it to me, hit me with liver shots, and I'm just, it was a good wake-up call. I'm like, wow, I want to learn to fight like this guy, and then just started training and started fighting right away.
Successful straight away?
Ups and downs. I think I won my first, like, two fights, then I think I lost one. So we're not straight success, but, you know, I was pretty good right away.
And when you're training for fighting, obviously, there's so much to mixed martial arts because you've got to be able to do everything.
Yeah.
Is it hard to separate your time into the different categories?
You know, definitely. Especially I came from a wrestling background. So when I first started, I was, you know, want to take guy down and punch him in the head before I started trying to go for submissions. So that my strategy was just get takedown and then punch him. Then I started learning the submissions. Then you start learning the boxing. But then there's the kicking, and there's so many elements. And even among the grappling, we have Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, there's wrestling, judo, sambo, and then there's different striking arts, and then it's learning to blend them together. So it's a never-ending journey. But that's what keeps it fun. Even though I've been fighting professionally, like, I mean, I guess almost 19 years now, I'm still constantly learning because there's so much to learn. It's impossible to, you know, learn all the knowledge, and things are always changing and evolving as well.
In what way are they changing and evolving?
I mean, techniques are always getting refined. Guys are always trying new ways. And sometimes you see things circle back through, though, too. Like, a technique will kind of go out of style and come back in. And, you know, there's guys that's always... it's a new sport. MMA has only been around since, what, 93?
Yeah.
I mean, well, there's been fights before that, but the professional UFC came...
Did you ever see the Muhammad Ali one against...
Yeah, so exactly. So MMA
that's the worst fight there's ever been.
Has been around longer, but the UFC has been around 25 years.
Yeah.
There was like a surge of, I mean, I think MMA got pretty big for a while back in Brazil and Japan. I forget the exact years, but maybe like 30s, 40s, 50s, somewhere around there. They're having like fights between Brazil and Japan, but then it kind of went away for a while and, you know, resurged in what, 25 years ago. So it's a very new sport with popularity.
For anyone who hasn't seen the Muhammad Ali thing, the guy who's fighting, I can't remember his name now, just lies on the floor and tries to kick
him. Kicks his leg over and over, right?
It was just horrible to watch, but nothing like the sport is now. You do American Jiu-Jitsu.
Yeah.
What is the difference between Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu and American Jiu-Jitsu?
Very similar, just more high pressure, aim for mixed martial arts, mixing in, you know, wrestling and sambo. So it's kind of the style that I dubbed as, you know, because I never trained with gi also, so I kind of just called my style American Jiu-Jitsu because it's a little bit different, and it was a mix between wrestling and jiu-jitsu and sambo.
Mm. Okay, and you've been pretty successful, haven't you? What was it like watching the UFC come up? Because obviously boxing dominates.
Yeah.
And UFC's now coming up.
Yeah, no, it's been very interesting. So when I first started watching the UFC, I think, before I fought, like, 95 or something, and I was like, oh, wow, this sport's crazy. Never thought I'd want to do it. And then I started fighting around 2000, and that was kind of that was kind of the worst years for the sport. That was when it got pushed underground. They banned it from almost every state in the U.S. Most countries banned it, so it was like super underground. We had to go fight like on in the states. We have like the Indian reservations, which yeah. don't really follow the same laws as they have federal law, but they don't follow like state laws, so they can get away with doing, you know, uh-huh. what the states can't. So we'd have to go on the Indian land and do our fights, and it was wow. super underground. And then so it was nice to see it start growing from there, get back on TV. Yeah, it was banned from TV in the U.S., everything.
Why was it banned? Was it banned like that worldwide or just U.S.?
Well, a lot of countries did it. I think a lot of countries are just now putting it back. They just said it was too violent, which is not any more violent than boxing. I think part of it might have been, you know, the money from boxing. We didn't want competition.
And, right.
Because a lot of the people that were trying to ban it were like big boxing supporters. Like politicians been like, oh, this sport's too violent, but they were supporting boxing. So it was probably... I'm sure there's some money behind it.
That's an amazing thing. So when it became legalized and then suddenly could put it on TV and everything, it's just been boom time, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's just gotten bigger and bigger and just keeps growing. And, you know, for a while there wasn't much money in it and the money's gone up quite a bit. Still not quite where boxing is, but at least there are guys making millions of fights now. Most guys still aren't making that kind of money, but at least there is some money there now.
Weren't you involved in one of the landmark ones with Georges St-Pierre?
Yeah.
What was that? It was in Canada, wasn't it?
It was crazy. I think it was around 60,000 live fans. It was just massive. It was the biggest one. I think it was second largest live attendance, and that was just massive going in there with that... You know, I was fighting a Canadian in Canada, so I was the bad guy. But Canadian fans are great, though. You know, they weren't that bad. So it was a hostile environment, but it wasn't like they were like seriously angry at you. So that was interesting going in there and had a war with GSP. You know, he's one of the greatest, if not the greatest of all time. Lost a really close decision, but it was being involved in one of the biggest fights of all time was a pretty great experience regardless.
How does it feel when you're about to walk in the ring with him?
It's an adrenaline rush, you know, because you're trying to get yourself pumped up going in there knowing you're going to be locked in a cage with one of the best fighters in the world to fight him. You know, you might hurt each other and there's that, but there's also, you know, you don't want to be embarrassed knowing there's millions of people watching, and it's quite a rush. Nothing can really match that either, you know. It can be nerve-wracking, but it's also exciting.
Do you still buzz going into a fight?
Oh, yeah, you know, when the grappling match, because I do professional grappling and the fighting, the grappling's not quite as intense. Because after going to fight, I used to get nervous for grappling matches, but after going and doing professional fightings, you go there and it's like, it's not quite as intense. But when you fight, you're always going to get nervous.
When you enter the ring, I've never been in a fight.
Yeah.
I'm still undefeated.
Never been. Yeah, at least you're undefeated.
No, I was in like street fights when I was a kid, but I've never actually entered into a ring of any description. So I have no idea what it feels like. Does everything slow down? Do your senses become really...
Maybe a little, but you're just kind of... You're trying to just calm yourself. You don't want to overthink things. So you're trying to get like in that meditative state where you fight better. Because sometimes if you're... Sometimes the worst fights I've had when you're like thinking too much and like your mind just gets a little bit off focus. But yeah, you try to just not really think anything, go out there and just your body knows what to do, so it's just letting it do it. You shouldn't be like thinking about doing this. You've trained so much, it's just going out there letting your body take over.
It must be hard not to overtrain though when you're doing mixed martial arts, because there's always something else you can be
really
doing.
It's really hard not to overtrain because like you said, there's so many disciplines between trying to get your wrestling, your boxing, your strength and conditioning. You know, it's tough. And then you're always thinking, oh, what if I'm not doing enough? What if my opponent's training more? So that's always something, always battling, trying not to overtrain.
And when you spar, how close can you get to a fight? A proper fight?
Yeah, that depends a lot, you know. Ideally, you should put your you know, we wear 16 gloves when you're going really hard. Sometimes you get the young guys, me included, they put the small gloves on and go hard, and that's just... I don't go hard with the small gloves anymore until fight time because too many injuries that way.
Yeah.
Guys get knocked out in training. I've had enough fights. I don't need to do that. Even with the big gloves, I'll only do a couple hard sparring sessions for a fight because I've fought so long. I think the young guys, they have to get in there some and just, you know, beat each other up just to toughen themselves up if they haven't had a lot of fights. But when they do that, they definitely should put the headgear, the 16-ounce gloves, the shin pads, and then they can... You can do it, but you shouldn't do it too often where you're trying to actually fight hard. Because that's when you start getting banged up, your head hit, hurt. But yeah, if you haven't been in a lot of fights, guys definitely do need to do that a few times before they fight. Put the gloves on and just like actually try to fight someone.
I interviewed Steve Collins once, who you might not know, but he's an Irish boxer. He was a champion over here. I think welterweight, was he? I'm looking around the room here for somebody to give me. Or middleweight, I think. Yeah, he was a middleweight. He fought Eubank and Nigel Benn and all those guys. And he told me once that he knew whether he'd won a fight as he walked into the ring. He could see the guy and go, I've won this today. Do you have that sort of feeling, do you think?
I think a lot of times with your confidence level and stuff, a lot of times you kind of know. I wouldn't say it's that sure, but a lot of times you're feeling really confident out there. Certain days you're just feeling confident and just know you're going to win.
Yeah. Is there a lot of work done before the fight mentally, as in just talking, talking down your opponent and things?
I mean, I think it depends on the opponent, but for me, that stuff doesn't really get in my head. I think most fighters, if you're at the top level, a little, smack talking is not going to psych you out. That might work some of the lower level guys, but when you're at that elite fighting for world titles, I don't think it's going to, for the most part, psych guys out.
What do you guys make of Conor McGregor?
I think he's really good, really talented fighter. I think he got a little bit overhyped because he is a great he's great at smack talking, and he's had some really like fast, impressive finishes. So he's one of those guys, when he looks good, he can look really good. He can go out there and just hit you right away and get those really fast knockouts and just look extremely impressive. But he does have some weaknesses as well. So my teammate actually, Nate Diaz, fought him twice. I cornered him for both of those fights. So I was closely involved in both of those camps.
Yeah. So. He's been quite big though for the sport over here. I don't know what he's like in America, but over here he became a household name.
He's huge in America too. He's done a great job promoting himself. And he is a great fighter. I'm not saying he's a great fighter. I'm just saying he's slightly overhyped. But he is a great fighter as well, and he's done a phenomenal job of marketing himself. People love the smack talking.
People like that are good for a sport if you're trying to put it on the map, aren't they?
Exactly.
There was him and Ronda Rousey at the same time, were both becoming huge, weren't they?
Ronda was. She was huge as well. But like you said, Conor's probably been great worldwide because he's made the sport bigger out here in Europe.
But what was it like when he decided to fight Mayweather? What did you feel about that?
He got paid. so good for him. I think it was always a reach for him to win the fight. I mean, going against one of the best boxers of all time in their own sport, it was a ballsy move. Like I said, McConnor, I got respect for him because the guy, he's not scared. He'll move up a weight, he'll go and do a different sport. The guy's he's not scared to fight, so he's a real fighter. I think people respect that as well.
That sort of seems to be a problem with a lot of boxing at the moment, doesn't it? That some of them are, they're not actually fighting the best fighters, whereas it seems with you guys, they're going to match the best fighters up constantly.
100%. That is a big problem with boxing. Guys are so worried about which I think part of the reason is the way boxing is. If you have losses on your record, they look down upon you. So a lot of these guys, especially in the beginning, they'll try to get they'll fight 20 nobodies just to rack up a record. And MMA has never been about that. It's all about who you fought. So right away, they just start throwing tough fighters at you, but it keeps it exciting, So if you have a couple losses on your record, they don't be like, oh, he's got a couple losses. They look at who you fought. Mm. So all the guys go out there and fight the best guys, and it just keeps it a lot more exciting. And unfortunately, boxing's not quite doing that.
Is it catching up with boxing, do you think, in popularity?
I think it's close.
Definitely with the youth.
I think in the US it definitely is, yeah.
I used to work at BT Sport, and they had the UFC there, and when they put videos out of you guys talking and stuff, the hits they got were just, it was off the scale. They're just, people love listening to it all and watching the footage and stuff.
Yeah, I think with the young crowd, I think MMA and UFC probably is bigger now.
Yeah. How does Joe Rogan fit into the whole picture? Because we're big fans of Joe Rogan over here, and he's obviously one of the king of the podcasting, probably. But he loves his MMA, and he's a color commentator, isn't he? On the
he's been great
UFC.
For MMA. He's been a big fan for a lot of years, and became a commentator. I think he got the commentator job just because he was a fan, and he was like, I know he was on Fear Factor. I don't know exactly how he got the job, but I know he was famous and a big fan of the sport, and somehow he weaseled his way in commentating, and. I think he's been great for the sport. I like Joe a lot. I think he does a good job commentating because he's super enthusiastic and can explain it well to the fans.
Yeah. So, and have you done his podcast?
I actually haven't. That's something, I've talked to him about that before, something I need to do. And his podcast is massive.
It's just huge, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a huge... And
and because he talks so often about mixed martial arts, mm-hmm. you sort of... I'm not listening it for that.
Yeah,
I get to learn quite a bit
I think he's been great for our sport of both mixed martial arts and jiu-jitsu because he is so into both of them. He goes off about it and helps educate people about it. So it's funny, I've noticed like a ton of comedians I'll run into and they'll like know about fighting. And I'm like, why do so many comedians know me?
Yeah, yeah.
But it's probably because Joe Rogan. I'm thinking, I bet it's Joe Rogan because all the time I see comedians and they're like, always like, oh, they know who I am. Like almost every time I run into a comedian, I'm like, it's got to be the crossover between Joe Rogan.
Well, in my mind, I'm about to do Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu at any time because
he sells it so good.
He just talks about it constantly. And every analogy he does is he puts it back to Jiu-Jitsu, basically, and MMA. But yeah, he's been quite amazing for bringing that sport alive, I think.
Yeah, and for I definitely wouldn't recommend the casual person to go do MMA. But for Jiu-Jitsu, I think it's just great for the normal person.
Is it? Can you get a lot of injuries from it, though, do you think?
I don't think so. I mean, I've never really been hurt bad jiu-jitsu. I mean, of course you can, but it's as long as you're like smart and careful and training at the right gym, people that train safe.
And good fitness as well from it, been told.
Yeah, it's a great workout. Yeah. That's the thing, a lot of people start doing jiu-jitsu and they stop going to the gym because they're getting their workout there and they're like, yeah, why go lift weights and run when I can, this is way more fun.
So will you fight? I understand the expression is for the rest of your life. Will you be in a?
I certainly hope so. Yeah, my body's healthy enough to do it because I love it. You know, like I said, I'm not going to be out like running and lifting when I'm done fighting. I don't plan out running, lifting, sparring. That stuff's not like fun. But going to jiu-jitsu, like really? I love doing that. Like I look forward to it.
And how long can you compete for? What are you now, 40?
I'm 40 now, yeah. So it's hard to say. You know, you start being your 40, you look at the older end of an athlete, but I still feel healthy. I'm still competing and doing well, so.
What age do you think you were peaking? Because when you're young, you must be so inexperienced when you go into a fight.
I think guys peak in this sport, for the most part, probably like mid-30s.
Right.
It's probably
it's quite late.
Yeah, because there's just so much to learn.
To learn, yeah.
I would say, yeah, you know, early mid-30s, most guys tend to be peaking. It's not like one of those early 20 sports. There's exceptions, of course, but...
It's unusual for an athlete, especially a fighter, to be a vegetarian. There's more of them around now than ever, but you've been a vegetarian the whole of your life.
Yeah. Yeah, I've grown up that way. So for me, I don't know the difference between eating meat and not eating meat. I mean, a couple of times I tried a few bites and I just felt nauseous. My stomach wouldn't break it down from not eating it. So, and because I've always been vegetarian, I feel great this way, you know, and so no reason to switch it. And to me, having been a vegetarian, the idea of, you know, eating meat seems kind of gross. And I've taken a bite, I'm just like, I can't do this.
Yeah.
So,
how long do you think that keeps you? Do you think that'll sustain you for longer in your career, the diet?
I feel like it because I still train almost every day and feel super young for my age. And, you know, I can't, like, it's hard to say 100% having, you know, not eating meat versus eating it since I haven't done it. But yeah. I mean, I feel great for my age. So
is there a difference in, you've obviously got to lose weight, cut weight for fights and stuff. Do you think it's harder or easier being a vegetarian?
Probably a little easier. It is tough too, though, because sometimes, you know, hard to get, you know, more carbs and stuff being a vegetarian. So there's a trade-offs.
Right. So a lot of people all sort of say to athletes, you need meat, you need the protein. How are you getting your protein? What sort of things are you having to do?
Well, beans are a good source of protein. And I'm not a vegan, so I'll eat some eggs. So that helps a lot. And then if I'm trying to gain weight, I'll add protein shakes in. But if I'm not, I don't. I try to just get my calories from just eating whole foods.
Have you had trainers try and get you to change your diet?
I've had a couple of trainers try to get it, yeah, but for the most part no. But I've had a couple of guys try to talk me into eating meat.
Really?
But everyone also says I'm one of the strongest guys they were trained with, so it's like they're like, all right, maybe you don't need the meat.
Right, okay. But you basically grew up as a vegetarian, didn't you? It was something in your household, so your parents didn't eat meat.
Yeah, exactly. So for me, it's possible my body, if you switch versus if you grow up that way, maybe you might react a little different. It's hard to say.
Yeah. I was watching a video with you, you did for Peter as well. So you're into animal welfare and things.
Yeah, I did a video with him. I think I worked with him like once, like years ago. Yeah, so I'm definitely, think they should treat animals better. I'm not like hardcore, you know, preaching to people about it. And I'm not really that style, but it would be nice to treat them a little better.
Going back to jiu-jitsu quickly, it's growing in popularity, isn't it, as a sport?
Yeah, massively.
When did it start finding its feet?
It's hard to say. Like I said, I started training in 2000. It was very niche back then. You had to like seek out jiu-jitsu gyms, and then they slowly just started up. You know, it's been kind of a slow, just gradual growth. But really, in the last 5-6 years, it's just gotten massive. And I think in the U.S. they're everywhere, but it seems like worldwide too. Even when you travel, you can find gyms everywhere. Seems like, you know.
So there's right. So in America, you've got a real big tradition of wrestling, haven't you? Which we don't really have over here. I don't know if anyone's ever. I don't think any people do it. So that you've got that already. That sort of blueprint of wanting. And so though I imagine that's attracting a lot of people towards jiu-jitsu, is it?
Yeah, it definitely makes an easy transition. But I think the majority of the people that train jiu-jitsu didn't start wrestling. They just kind of get caught up into it later. But wrestling definitely helps, because if you've wrestled, it's a different grappling art, but it's a grappling art. So they're related, you know. It's like going from boxing to kickboxing. There's a lot of similarities.
Mm. And what's the difference between the gi and the, you called it American?
Yeah, the
jiu-jitsu.
Gi is just, there's just more.
That's the one where you're wearing the suit.
Yeah, like I do a little gi, but I'm mostly all no gi because I focus on MMA. And the gi, it just slows it down a little bit. So there's like handles, adds some new techniques you can't do without it. They're fairly similar. I think that the no gi is a little more faster and athletic. So sometimes older people and like, or not as athletic people prefer the gi because it slows things down a little bit.
Do you have to go for, well, obviously you're going for different grips, but you're trying to attack different parts of the body?
Yeah, you know, just to attack the whole body, you know, from necks, arms, legs. I mean, recently, like, the leg attacks got really popular, all the heel hooks. And
why is that?
I think traditional Brazilian jiu-jitsu, they didn't really do leg attacks, like back, you know, in the 90s and stuff. It was considered kind of cheap, but then the new modern era and the Sambo guys were all really into it. I think the new recent jiu-jitsu guys realize, hey, they're effective, started attacking them. And, you know, things go through trends. In the last few years, people really started attacking the legs. A lot of it's actually the guy I trained under in New York currently. He put a system together for attacking legs, and his students were so successful tapping everyone out with leg locks. I think kind of everyone started watching that and started trying to copy it and attack legs.
Right.
Things go through trends in the sports, though. You know, like every few years, it'll be kind of the new trend, and that he was so successful with leg lock attacks, and the students, everyone started copying him.
Do you have different coaches for every different type of?
Yeah, you know, have a jiu-jitsu coach. You know, well, for wrestling, sometimes we'll have a coach, and then, you know, you just get a boxing coach, sometimes kickboxing coach. You usually want a few different coaches.
Okay, and are they all vying for your time?
Pretty much, yeah.
Do you do fitness on top of that, or is all your fitness fighting?
Yeah, you know, running and lifting too, so it can be pretty exhausting. That's why you got to be careful with too many trainers too, because if they're not all in sync with each other, you get yourself overtrained pretty easy. You got to watch going in. If your coaches aren't working together, like every coach might want to get you exhausted. And
right.
If you have like 3-4 workouts a day and every coach is trying to push you the hardest workout, that can be detrimental. So you got to always make sure you have coaches that understand that, hey, every workout doesn't need, I have like 2 more workouts a day, so don't go and try to break me.
So the sport must be getting more professional every year because the money's getting bigger.
You must have
guys who are overseeing all this for you now.
Yeah, for me, I kind of do it myself and work with it. But yeah, some camps have guys trying to oversee it, because you really got to watch out. Sometimes the strength and conditioning coaches, they want to go there and just break you down. But they got to realize, like, that's supplemental. You have your sparring, your wrestling. So if they go and just, if the strength and conditioning coach just goes and destroys your body, that's not the only workout we're doing.
And how often are you fighting? When you're at your peak in the UFC and stuff, how often are you
generally going? Like 3 times a year, you know, 4 is like tops. I mean, there's rare cases where guys will fight like 5-6 times in a year, but generally like 3 is pretty standard.
You can't do that. You can't go for more.
You can, but it's tough, because, you know, usually like 2 month training camp and then you fight, you need a little, there's a downtime, you're still training, but not as intense. So if you're just constantly fighting, that's when guys start getting hurt a lot.
And going back to the diet again a bit, do you have to cut the weight to fight?
Yeah, so when you're fighting, you're dieting too. That can wear you out mentally.
Isn't that dangerous?
The cutting the water or the diet?
Well, I don't know how you guys do it.
Yeah, it can be pretty dangerous. There's actually been a few deaths from cutting weight. Because what happens is guys will try to diet down to weight, but let's say I'm fighting... or if someone's fighting 170 and you diet down, so ideally I should be within like 185 and cut 15 pounds water. But let's say if I didn't properly diet and I'm at 195 and still got to make 170. So you can get guys, I mean, I've never had to cut that much water, but sometimes you get guys having to cut like 25 or more pounds of water, and it's just severe dehydration. So there's actually been a few deaths from cutting weight. A new show in Asia, ONE FC, they're doing a new policy where they check your hydration and give you several weigh-ins, so you can't cut weight.
Okay.
Because they had someone die at their show cutting weight, so they implemented this new policy, so they're trying to stop weight cutting.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, hopefully it works out for him. Because everyone's
trying to come down a weight.
And everyone hates weight cutting too. It's one of those things, everyone hates it, but if you don't do it, you're giving up 20 pounds.
Right.
So you're literally pulling 20 pounds of water the day before, and then you're putting it back on. So it's completely pointless, but everyone does it. So it'd be so much better if we just checked hydration and no one had to like dehydrate themselves.
I suppose the problem with that though is that if you're up and you're a big fight and you're not making weight or hydration, mm-hmm. that fight gets called off, and then
exactly.
All the guys who are making the money are like, "What this exactly. fight? We that, can't that, have that, this that, fight." Yeah, off. That's where the problem
so
happens.
In these fights. Yeah, that's why it's. It'll be interesting to see how it goes in this ONE FC show. They've done it for a couple of shows now and haven't pulled off any fights yet. But I'm also not sure like how transparent they are with the weigh-ins. Like if someone misses weight, what they're doing, I don't really know what their whole system is.
Yeah. What else are you fighting in? You're fighting. You're still fighting in the. Is it World Series of Fighting or Professional Fighters League?
Yeah, Fight League. My contract just expired though, so right now I'm a free agent. Might talk to a few shows and figure out what to do next.
Oh, so you're touting yourself around at the moment. How does that work?
Well, I haven't really started yet. Honestly, this contract just expired, so I might talk to a few shows, see what the options are, and figure out what to do next.
Okay.
I got a manager, who will do the calls and stuff, talk to everyone.
Is it a friendly community?
Yeah. I mean, for the most part, there's sometimes a few guys don't like each other, but for the most part, you get along with everyone.
Yeah.
It's a pretty small sport, when you're at the top level, so you kind of know all the guys.
And it's tough to get on with people you're fighting all the time, but you spar with each other, don't you? And
yeah.
Do you get on with each other or do you work with each other?
It depends. Guys your weight that you might fight, you kind of try to stay away from. But you also need guys to help you train. So you try to get a couple of good guys around your weight that can help you train. But you don't want to be cross-training with too many guys that are top level around your weight, because you don't really want to become friends with guys that you might fight. And jiu-jitsu is different. It's not, it's not as you're not trying to hurt each other. So I can be friends with a guy in jiu-jitsu and go out and go compete against him. But in MMA, you don't want to be friends with someone when you're out there trying to break each other's bones and noses and stuff.
when I said you were coming on the podcast on Twitter, I said any questions. The question that always came back is who's the best fighter you fought against?
Yeah, it's tough. I fought in a lot of the top guys. I've had one of the beat multi-world champions, but probably had to pick one. George St. Pierre. I think he's potentially the greatest fighter of all time.
Of all time,
he's in there with the debate for sure. He's one of the top two or three of all time. So.
What makes him so good?
He's just good everywhere.
He's got the whole
stand up, phenomenal wrestling, good timing. His movements in and out so well.
Hmm. There was this great video of you that I saw on YouTube where you decided to some Trump supporter had got beaten up or something.
Yeah.
And you'd seen this and you thought, hey, this is not good. And you're going up against all these guys in masks. Tell us what happened.
Yeah, I was over in. Well, I live in San Francisco, it's right by Berkeley, which is extremely, extremely liberal over there. And there was, I was getting dinner over there with my girlfriend. There was some guy was speaking over there, Milo, some kind of right-wing provocateur.
What's his name? What?
Enough. Yeah, I think he's actually an English guy, which I didn't even know who he was at the time. Yeah. So I was just over there and there were people going to see him speak and they just, people in Berkeley, just thousands of these guys, or at least hundreds of them, came in with masks and gloves and just started beating up everyone that was there to see him. It was insane. And the police, I guess, got told to stand down because the mayor didn't want the Milo guy in town.
Right.
That's just how ridiculous they are. They're so extreme that way. They'll like attack anyone with different views over there. And then, so I just came in and started trying to help people. There were people hit me with clubs. Had to fight a few of them off.
They were attacking you?
Oh yeah, I was attacked. I had to drop a few guys. So I fought the one guy and I got him in some store. They were going to knock the windows out of the store, but then they're like, no, it's an immigrant-owned store. I'm like, I don't know why it makes a difference who owns the store. These people are like, they're so caught up on like what you are. It's so weird.
Right.
And so I had to fight these guys off, and then I ran in, grabbed the police, told everyone I was getting jumped. The cops were like, yeah, we're not going in there.
Oh, wow.
Like, what the hell? Yeah, and the Berkeley, there's been that, that's happened quite a bit in Berkeley. They've just been...
America seems to be quite split at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, it's really weird.
People the right and the just, left seem to be really at each other.
Yeah, it's pretty bad right now. But unfortunately, it's really, it's honestly like, it's probably like 10% on one side, 10% on the other side.
Yeah.
And the majority of people wish everyone would just like calm down.
Yeah. Yeah, does it feel weird though at the moment having that sort of animosity going on in the country?
Yeah, it's just kind of annoying that people are at each other's throats for like things that aren't really... that big of a deal. Because I think people are, because I'm good, you know, I'm good friends with, you know, I live in the most liberal cities, but then being a fighter around more conservative people, and the vast majority of both sides are great people.
Yeah.
And you get all the people on the left for some reason are calling all the Trump supporters racist, which is just, for the most part, not true at all.
Yeah.
But for some reason, they've got their minds worked up that they're like these racist people when they're not.
Did you play any other sports growing up?
Just wrestling.
Only wrestling. Why didn't you get involved in football or baseball?
I'm not sure. I just, you know, I just started wrestling. I just really liked that and wasn't really, didn't feel like trying anything else.
Is the big fights attracting the Hollywood stars out to sit ringside?
Yeah, you get the big fights, get quite a few of them there.
Are the other sportsmen coming to watch as well? Is it? Have you been? MMA been totally accepted into the?
I think so at this point. Yeah, I think definitely in the last 5-6 years. For a while, some people were kind of looking down upon it, but then it kind of became mainstream.
Yeah, it's amazing. I had I'm going to forget his name. Bisping.
Michael Bisping.
He decided to teach me some. Moves once on a TV show.
Oh yeah,
it hurt.
What did he do you choke you or punch you or?
Yeah, he started doing some jiu-jitsu on me, and I must admit I was
this is not fun.
I tapped out very quickly.
That's not who you want to start out with.
I tapped out as soon as he just looked at me. I was like, you've won.
I used to go and spar with Bisping actually. We sparred together for a while.
And how good was he?
He was really good. I mean, he won a world title, so
yeah.
He ended his career with a world title, so that was great.
Yeah. And when you spar with someone like him, how what percent are you going at each other?
We would go pretty hard, honestly, me and him would spar, because it was there. I came and sparred a few times, like right before he had fights, so we were going pretty hard.
He's a good guy, isn't he? He's funny.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, he's a great guy. I know some people don't like him, but I've always got along with him great.
Did they? I didn't know that. Some people
think he's a prick. he has a rap as being a prick, at least in the U.S. I don't know if he does in England, but people in the U.S. are like, that guy's a prick.
Really?
I'm like, I like him. He's always cool to me.
Why is that? Because he's got attitude.
I think he's got a little attitude. I don't know. I think he's just not real friendly with people he don't know sometimes.
Right.
I think he gets kind of annoyed when fans are coming up taking pictures and stuff.
Right.
It's just kind of his style. He's just like, I don't feel like dealing with this. So
I wouldn't tell him that.
But hey, he's always been great. Yeah, he's always been great with me. So I like the guy.
Yeah,
I know some people don't.
Yeah, he's a good guy. All right, listen. There's some questions I ask everyone. So I'm gonna start doing these right now with you. What one piece of advice would you like to give our listeners that has been invaluable to your life?
One piece of advice.
Yeah.
Like that I got, or just in general, or
just in general. But you could.
I think that's hard. I think just, you know, if whatever you want to do with your life, if you're passionate about something, you can make it happen. Like for me, fighting example and jiu-jitsu, everyone's like, oh, you're crazy, you can't make a career out of that. But you know, if you're really passionate about something, you can find a way to make it work. But also you have to work extra hard, because I always get people coming up to me being like, oh yeah, I'm gonna be a professional fighter, and then they're like, you know, at the gym like 4 times a week, and you're like, yeah, you're just wasting your time. So if you're passionate about something, whatever it is, you know, you can make it happen, but you really gotta work even harder than most jobs.
What are you gonna do once the career actually fighting's over?
I think I'm gonna get into open some gyms and train some other fighters and stuff. I want to stay involved with the sport. I really enjoy it, so I want to stay around it.
Would you recommend people doing it? Do you have to be a certain type of person to, like, the training? I know you're saying jiu-jitsu's great for everyone. Yeah,
I would never recommend anyone to do MMA. You would have to, you better really want to do it, and if you're going to do it, because if you're going to be a successful fighter, you're going to do it whether you're recommended to do it or not. So if you're adamant that you're going to fight, then yes, do it. But if you're having to like ask, should I do it, then no, you shouldn't do it. You better really want to do the sport and be sure you want to do it if you're going to fight.
Has there ever been a moment you're thinking, I don't want to go into a ring again?
It's crossed my mind. You know, you have a bad fight, you're like, man, do I want to do this? This is a tough ass sport. But yeah, I know it's a, like, I love it and certainly glad I did it, but it's a tough sport and not something that I would ever try to encourage or push anyone into. But also, if someone wanted to do it, I would help them train and do it, but I would have to make sure they really want to do it first.
There's nothing more raw, I suppose, in your emotions is either winning a fight or losing a fight. You lose a fight, how does that feel? How long does it take you?
It's terrible. It's, you know, it's devastating. It's like the worst feeling. But then winning a fight is the best feeling. It's, like I said, it's an intense sport.
How long does it take for the feeling to wear off and you just need to...
I'm a pretty upbeat person, so I can usually bounce back, you know, pretty fast. You know, you might be down for a week or two, but then I'm like... you know, I don't get like super depressed. You're definitely not feeling as good, but luckily I'm a person that can get over things pretty fast. But still, it's not a good feeling. There's just so much on the line, you know. You're physically losing. You know, you make a lot less money. Your next fight, you're gonna make less money. It's, you know, embarrassing on TV. There's just a lot on the line in these fights.
I love the fact that it's embarrassing. Like, it's so funny you say that, because for people like me, anyone who walks into a fight, there's nothing embarrassing about losing, because you're putting yourself in there.
Yeah, if you get beat up in front of millions of people, that'd be pretty embarrassing.
I don't think it is, because even the idea that you're going to step in is pretty, you know, it cancels out the embarrassment. The idea that you're actually going to go in
with
someone who can.
It's
pretty dangerous.
Yeah, exactly. And you're also, you know, you can go out there and get hurt. You might go out there, have to be cut. Luckily, I've never broken any bones or anything. But, you know, guys get seriously hurt sometimes.
Is there a problem with the choking, with people not tapping out?
There hasn't been a lot of problem with chokes. I think it's like fairly one of the safer things. You just like pass out.
The thing I quite like about... I could be talking crap here, right, by the way. So please correct me. But with boxing... when you go down and you're knocked out, you can get back up again, and you can keep getting back up if you can make the count. Again, I might be talking crap, but with MMA, I watched the UFC, when they get knocked down, because you're allowed to jump on them, the ref calls it off really quickly.
Finishes up faster generally, yeah.
Feels that might be safer.
I would suspect that's definitely safer. You know, like I said, I mean, no one's like done studies on it, but I suspect the boxers take way more head damage, because you get knocked down, you have time to recover, get up. Also, the bigger gloves allow you to take more shots.
Okay.
So, I'm not saying our sport's safe, but I think it's definitely safer if you had to pick between the two.
All right. What's the biggest mistake you've made? Next question. Have you made any big mistakes?
Can't think of any like massive mistakes that I look at that I regret. There's definitely things, you know, small mistakes, but nothing that I can think of top of the head that would be a massive mistake.
Okay, any life hacks? These are sort of tips on life or anything. Have you got any of those sort of things?
Not really. Just like I said, if you're trying to be successful at something, you better put extra energy into it. If you're trying to do an odd job, you know, don't just be like, oh, I'm going to do this job and then not do anything.
Yeah.
Just you better put that extra work in if you're trying to make it.
Do you get time to do anything else?
Yeah, I do.
Do you have hobbies and things?
Yeah, a little bit. You know, I love like snowboarding, mountain biking. I took a while off, you know, for a bunch of like 10 years, I stopped doing it. I was too scared to get hurt fighting. But now that I'm older again, and I've had a successful career, I'm like, all right, I can start snowboarding again and rock climbing and doing all those fun sports.
So you're sort of guy who likes adrenaline buzz then.
I love the adrenaline. Yeah. I used to snowboard a lot growing up. But I took a bunch of years off because I'm like, oh, I can't get hurt for fighting. So it was a couple of years ago, I finally, I'm like, I'm going to start snowboarding again.
Where'd you grow up then? Somewhere where there was mountains?
Yeah, I grew up like, it's kind of near Lake Tahoe, which is outside of San Francisco in California. So it's this nice small town, but near like mountains, and great, great place for a kid. Kind of boring once you grow up, but awesome. You can go snowboarding. Like I said, snowboarding, rock climbing, all that's right there.
Have you ever been snowboarding in Europe?
I have not.
Because it's a completely different thing, because everyone toots at you all the time. They're all moody.
And
really? It's so, you know, I love snowboarding. And when you go to France or anywhere like that, right, everyone's angry at the ski lifts and everyone's tooting each other.
How could you be angry when you're up skiing?
That's it. And if you're on a snowboard, all the skiers...
They look down at the
skiers,
snowboarders there.
Skiers hate you and everyone toots at you.
It used to be like that in the US, but that was a long time ago, like 20 years ago.
Yeah, we still look down at the
snowboarders, huh?
And then I went to Whistler and everyone's happy and smiling. Yeah. I'm like, this is how it should be.
This
is amazing.
Yeah, I've never been to Whistler, but here that's great.
Yeah,
I want to go.
Fantastic
up there.
Up there.
But yeah, Lake Tahoe's, that's great there. That's where I would go.
Oh, that's fantastic. All right. Can you recommend a book?
A book? Let's see. Was currently reading, well, it's an older book that was really good. It's Born to Run. I think that was interesting that I was reading. I think it's like 10 years old.
What's that about? The guy who took up running and...
It's about these guys that do these like ultra marathons, like the 1500 mile races. These guys are insane. I have no idea why anyone would want to do that.
You get in a ring and fight. Or
they run like 24 hours and it's just insane.
Have you ever had the chance to meet David Goggins? Do you know David Goggins, the ultra marathon?
I've heard of him, but no.
Yeah, okay. Look him up. He's one of those guys. He's absolutely mental.
Yeah, I have no idea why someone would push himself like that. But it's interesting reading these guys' mindsets and going, you know,
He's on David Goggins on Joe Rogan all the time, and Joe Rogan's trying to get him into jiu-jitsu.
Really?
Yeah, that's it. He tries to get everyone on. Yeah. You know, so there you go. Okay, so finally, what is the meaning of life? Good luck with this one.
Meaning of life, yeah. I don't think anyone's figured that one out. I'll start religion if I do. Yeah, for me, I just try to, you know, do what I enjoy, have fun, treat people good. Just be good to people and make sure you're also having a life you enjoy, because it doesn't last that long.
What's next for you then? You don't know. You're at the moment, you're just...
Yeah, you know, I don't think I'm going to fight too much longer. You know, getting a little older, I've already had a good career. You know, luckily made some pretty good money fighting and stuff. But probably get into, you know, opening some gyms, hope train some fighters, the crazy people that want to fight. Mm. Not try to talk anyone into it. Yeah, run some jiu-jitsu gyms as well. That one's easy, not as hard. Try to talk people into that one.
Can you believe where the sport has gone? Because you've watched it come up, have you? Can you believe where it's ended up?
For me, when I first got in it, it was almost a dying sport. So it was frustrating the first couple of years because no one watched it. It wasn't on TV. It was frustrating. So it was great to see it just blow up.
Yeah. Listen, thanks so much for coming out. If people want to follow you, go to Twitter.
Jake Shields on Instagram. Twitter is Jake Shields, AJJ.
Right. Okay. And where else are you doing these seminars? You're doing one at Wave.
Wave. I'm actually, unfortunately, I don't even know the name of the spot. Right. I'm at tomorrow. What is it?
Madhouse Reading.
And then in Amsterdam, I got one at 10th Planet Amsterdam, and then one at Fight IQ in Amsterdam.
Okay. Are you back to Europe soon, or are you just...
Yeah, probably. I mean, it's not that far from... I'm currently living in New York, and I've been in California my whole life, so it's just such a quick flight from New York. I want to take advantage of coming over here.
Brilliant. Thank you so much for doing the podcast today. Yeah, top man. Thanks a lot, Jake. What a lovely bloke Jake Shields is. Thoroughly enjoyed that conversation with him, except I called Nigel Ben Tony Ben at one stage.
I'd love to see that fight.
Oh, God, I felt so stupid. It was like, Tony Benn?
For listeners who don't know, maybe people who don't live in the UK, Tony Benn is a now deceased
politician.
It was...
Yeah. Smoked a pipe.
Smoked a pipe, yeah. Not a fighter.
And Nigel Benn was called the Dark Destroyer, and he was vicious. He was unbelievable in the ring.
They're very different.
Wow. Yeah, it was a good time back then, wasn't it? When we had Steve Collins, Chris Eubank, and Nigel Benn all fighting it out.
You told me a funny story about Chris Eubank.
Yeah, I was.
It was after the podcast. Did it bear repeating? It's pretty funny.
Oh, well, when I was on Soccer M, we had him. I really like his company as well, Chris Eubank. He's always good value. And he left the studio. He had to go off and do something one day. And as he left the studio, he'd just gone out of shot and gone out of the room, out of the studio. And I said, I think I could have had him. And he saw it on a monitor and he came running back in. He gave me a punch and it absolutely winded me.
Did they get it on camera? Did they?
Yeah.
Oh, it's on.
Oh, it's all on camera, yeah.
Well, that's got to be on YouTube somewhere, isn't it?
I don't think people are doing that then.
Oh, I suppose. No, I suppose.
Yeah. Well, actually, on that point, interestingly...
Did he have a smile on his face?
Yes, of course he did.
All right. He
wasn't angry.
Very good.
Mark, what do these things have in common? Wooden tennis rackets, child chimney sweeps, the plague, and kettles. They're all things from the past that we don't need now. Well, apart from the kettle...
I thought they were all things that you had in your shed.
Apart from the kettle. The kettle is still being used, apparently, but not for someone like me who lives in the future. They're not losers, Mark. They're just not caught up with getting into the future. I live in the future because I have a cooker. Spelt quicker, pronounced cooker. It's 100-degree hot water straight from the tap. And on my cooker, I can do hot water, I can do cold water, I can do 100-degree hot water and filtered water all from one tap. I love it. And they're fantastically sponsors of this show. So thank you to Cooker, spelt Cooker, pronounced Cooker. If you want to check these taps out, go to cooker.co.uk. So yeah, sponsors of the podcast. And Beer 52, Mark. Let's discuss that this week.
Yes, it's provocatively, they've chosen European month for... I don't know. Can you think why? I don't know.
Oh, I don't know. 29th of March, Mark, is the Brexit deadline.
Right.
Are we staying or are we going? What is happening, Mark?
Well,
are you watching it?
Yes. And I still don't know.
Absolutely. I have no idea what's going to happen at all. You know, you want to have a good guess. I literally have no idea what's going to happen.
No idea.
Let me do the read on this for you. Europe's given us so much over the years. Booze cruises, exotic sausages, our royal family. A bit controversial. But perhaps the greatest gift has been fantastic beer and breweries. We love drinking the stuff, and our homegrown craft brewing talent loves working alongside their European peers. That's why this month Beer 52 and Ferment have teamed up with awesome Citizens of Everywhere project to bring you 12 world-class collaborations showcasing the very best of UK/EU relations. Whatever the outcome of Brexit, we're excited to show you craft beer community as excited as ever by its future of brewing and drinking beer together. Let me just remind you of this. It's the leading craft
Discovery Club,
yeah. And so basically, if you want a free crate of beer or box of beer, it's 8 bottles or cans, and it costs you £5.95. That's the postage and packaging, and then you can cancel your subscription.
That's right, yeah.
As soon as you get it, you get a magazine as well, the Ferment magazine, and you get
a snack.
Go to beer52, beer52/lovejoy, and that's how you do it.
beer52.com.
Beer 52, thank God you're here, Mark. beer52.com/lovejoy, and that's where you can sign up.
Can you tell I'm invested in this sponsor?
And it's great. They just arrive, and so we've got, what beer are we going to try
today?
We've got
French beer today. This is the Ninkasi Blanc, or Blanche, I think that's how you pronounce it.
Sounds good.
There you go. Get your laughing gear around that, sunshine.
Okay, let me taste this one. Oh, it's delicious. That's really nice, isn't it?
How good's that?
Oh, actually, hold on. It's got slight sour tones to it.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Ooh.
No, come on now. Come on, nail your...
No, the first taste is amazing. The back end... It's sour. I'm not sure.
I like that.
Do you love it?
Yeah, I really like that.
That's why I like doing this, because I don't like every one of them. Some of them I love, and some of them, that's a really interesting taste though. But the aftertaste, slightly sour.
I like that. What's been your favourite one so far, do you think, from the ones we've tried?
Oh, I don't know. They're different every time.
The Boss one was good, wasn't it?
What I like is trying different beers. Yeah. I've never been the sort of person who just goes into somewhere and says, that's it, that's my beer.
Yeah.
That's all I want. Pint of Skull every day. That's all I want. And that's all I'm having for the rest of my life is a pint of Skull. I don't do that anymore. You know, I don't do that. I just go in and I think, ooh, what have they got? What's exciting? And the only thing I always say, though, this is the thing, is I say, what percent is it? Because if it's like 7.4% or something, to use an MMA expression, I tap out. I'm not doing that. That's just
7.7% is smack talk.
Oh,
exactly.
Anyway, listen, this has been a fantastic podcast. Thoroughly enjoyed it. Jake Shields. He was a great guest. And
that's great.
Yeah, so we'll be back very soon.
Could you have had him?
No. He could have killed me within...
I was hoping you'd make that mistake again. And flying through the door.
No, it's just amazing. The only thing I could think of when I was talking to him just briefly is that he's got to step into a ring with somebody who wants to hurt him, and he wants to hurt somebody else. And I watch it, but
one punch from him. One.
Yeah.
One punch in the face from him. You'd think about it for the rest of your life, wouldn't you?
Mm. It's too hard. What they do is too hard. You know, hats off to them to actually keep on going in. You know, he's been at it a long time. Anyway, that's it for us. We'll see you very soon. For the time being, peace and love, joy.
Bye.